Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.
Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Sarah Fenske. Today, we're going to get to meet two members of the St. Louis band Cave of Swords. They have new music out after a four-year hiatus. They'll explain what inspired their new album and what took so long to get it done. First, though, there is a new movie that you can screen beginning tomorrow. You might be particularly interested in this one if you're Italian, or if you love St. Louis history, even better if both are true. The film is a one-hour documentary that tells the story of the Hill neighborhood and the Italian roots that go all the way back to the area's clay mines.
It had been a spa in the early 19th century, and then it had been a home for French Icarian communists. And then someone discovered in the 1870s, 1880s, that the clay there was perfect for making brick tile and terracotta and fire brick.
There were some clay mines there that spread out underneath what is currently the hill. And there was a Belgian mining company that owned the mines. And the Belgian mining company had a recruiting office in a town called Cugino, Italy, which is in the province of Milan. These particular places lost nearly half their population. Some of the towns literally lost half the population between 1890 and about 1920, with the majority of those folks ending up in St. Louis.
And life on the hill for its earliest residents, these Italian immigrants, often wasn't easy. That's something the film makes clear.
There's a great saying that was common in this particular Italian immigrant community that they said, we were told that the streets there were paved with gold. And when we got there, we found that they weren't paved with gold. In fact, they weren't paved at all. And then we found out that it was us that was going to have to pave them.
When we come over, when we hear about America and Europe and Sicily, you look like you go to paradise. But when you come here, it's a winter. It's no paradise anymore.
And the film takes the story from those clay mines to Yogi Berra and Joe Garagiola all the way to the present day. It's called America's Last Little Italy, and it's part of Cinema St. Louis's 20th Annual Filmmakers Showcase, which kicks off tomorrow. And we're joined now by Joseph Puleo. He is the director and producer of America's Last Little Italy. So, Joseph, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Your film answers a question that I have wondered about for a long time, and that is why this relatively flat neighborhood is called the Hill in the first place. What's the story there?
Yes, as you just heard, the clay miners, when they would walk out from working in the mines, they would have to walk up a hill. And they would yell out, La Montagna, La Montagna, in this dialect. Which loosely translates to the mountain, which then got Americanized into the hill, the hill. So that's how the hill got its name.
I guess I'd be even more confused if the neighborhood went by the mountain. I mean, it's definitely not a mountain.
No, the hill is definitely a better name for it.
Well, so there's a lot of great stories in this film, and it really tells one great story, which is the story of this neighborhood. What made you want to explore this particular neighborhood in film?
Well, our executive producer, Rio Vitale, he's the one that came to me with the idea. He had actually written a book on the hill, and he came to me and pitched this idea of, you know, let's get down there, let's go make a documentary on the hill. And, you know, a lot of books had been written, and there had been, you know, stories told on, you know, PBS about different restaurants and the toasted raviolis, etc. But no one had really done a comprehensive documentary on the hill. So that's really what piqued my interest. But the main thing that had happened was some of these older residents of the hill were beginning to pass away. Mm. And Rio, this kind of lit a fire under Rio that, you know, we need to get down there now and get these stories while we still can. So It was in late May of 2018 that he pitched us this idea. Myself and my co-producing partner, Steve Kakouris, were pitched this idea. And within 5 days, all three of us were down on the hill, and we were filming interviews, and we just finished the project last month. So it's come full circle in these last 2 years to this film that we now have.
And you do get so many of these old timers to go on camera. Were they eager to tell their stories?
Yes, I mean, that's the thing. A lot of these people. None of them have ever been asked any of these questions. They had never been interviewed. And so they were all really eager and excited to be able to share this with our crew. And I think that comes across in a lot of the interviews, the fact that, yes, we do have experts and historians leading the way. But when you're able to get those firsthand experiences from these people that lived it, I think that really grounds the film.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely does. And you also got some great footage just seeing some of these, weddings or people out on the square, people in front of St. Ambrose, with so many of these longtime residents agreeing to be on camera. I had to wonder, were some of these their home movies?
Yes, we were very lucky that multiple Hill families came forward with 8mm reels that they were willing to donate to us to use in the film. One of the families was actually my own family, so that meant a lot to me to be able to share my family's history and background in this film that I now am directing. It was just, I don't think I would often think, my grandparents, or the fact that, when this stuff was being filmed of them, in the 50s and 60s, to think now that in 2020 this is going to be, shared hopefully to the masses, it's a pretty incredible thing that this has come full circle.
Yeah, that personal connection is very cool. Now, you make a lot in this movie of this divide between the Italians who had come here from Sicily and the Italians who had come from the Lombardy region in northern Italy. Which side was your family on?
We're Sicilian, so I think that kind of helps with my ability to be able to talk about the fact that, the Sicilians were looked down upon by the northern Italians, and it's not necessarily seen to the same extent as it is today, but in Italy there is still that divide, and that's one of the things that we get into in the film.
Yeah, and it was interesting to hear people talk about this. Was it hard to get them to be frank about this prejudice? You had some northern Italians explaining that their parents did not want them hanging out with Sicilians, much less marrying them.
You could tell that they were kind of, walking on eggshells a little bit. But after, that was one of the questions I would always kind of wait for, after you've kind of got them warmed up and get comfortable with you to where you're just having a conversation, you're able to kind of slip those kind of questions in and hopefully get a true reaction to it without, necessarily thinking about, well, how is this going to come across on camera? We really wanted to just tell the truth of the matter, and we were lucky enough that was able to come through.
We're talking to filmmaker Joseph Paleo about his new film, just finished last month. It's called America's Last Little Italy. It's part of Cinema St. Louis's 20th Annual Filmmaker Showcase that kicks off tomorrow. It's all streaming, so you have no excuse not to watch these films. Joseph, one of the key figures in this film is someone who is new to me. I imagine he will not be to anyone who lived in St. Louis in the 60s, and that is Monsignor Salvatore Polizzi. He was the powerful priest at St. Ambrose for many years. Let's listen to a clip from the film where people talk about Monsignor Polizzi.
He had a charisma. I personally witnessed people who said and could not stand Monsignor Polizzi. But if he called them and said, I need you to do this, those people who would talk so bad about him would do exactly what he asked them to do. He just had that sort of charisma.
Yeah, people believe he drove around with a ruler in his car, because if your grass was a certain height over, He would knock on your door and say, it's time to cut your grass.
And then you'd go to confession and confess. He goes, wait a minute. I know a couple other things you did, Furman. You better tell me those too. okay, Father. Oh no, he would take a walk through the school. I would say he's probably like a CEO of a big corporation, and the Hill was his corporation.
And that's from America's Last Little Italy. Now, Joseph, many of your interviewees credit Monsignor Polizzi for saving the neighborhood. Do you think they're right about that?
Oh, 100%. You know, in a time during the 60s and 70s when a lot of these ethnic Italian neighborhoods across America were going under, Polizzi really sees this and decides that he's not going to let this happen to the Hill. The Hill is too important to let this happen, to let the Hill go under. And Polizzi really decides to enact a way to keep it from going under, which is the Hill 2000, which is the neighborhood organization in which there was two mottos at the time. It was pride builds and don't move, improve. Basically, the thought was if we make the neighborhood as nice as possible, people won't want to leave, because at this time you have people, you know, kind of fleeing to the suburbs from the city in search of a better house or things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the Hill houses are small, and he understood that. But, you know, his whole selling point was, you know, the Hill is special. Are you going to know your neighbors? Are you going to have a beautiful church? Are you going to have all the things that the Hill offers you in the suburbs? And so that really was one of the key things for him, was getting the people to stay. Now, if you were going to possibly leave the neighborhood or you passed away, the Hill had a list in which people from the neighborhood were putting their name on, that when a house became available, we would be able to connect a piece of property with someone on this list that wanted to stay in the neighborhood. And that really was one of the key ways in keeping the neighborhood Italian, in a move that pays off to this day. I don't think myself and you would be having this conversation right now if it wasn't for Father Polizzi, because this neighborhood wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. So there would be no documentary. It would just be like every other Little Italy across America, in which it's a tourist attraction, and you know, they have restaurants and trinkets that they're selling, and the Hill has all that as well. But the Hill also has this deep, rich tradition in which these people are passing their houses down from generation to generation. And that really was started, you know, by Polizzi in this attempt to keep this ethnic identity. And, you know, I think the ends justify the means in the fact that the Hill truly is America's last Little Italy because of this.
Now, you say that ethnic identity, and that is so important with the Hill being what it is today, but the film really never, it doesn't really grapple with what I think some city residents would say is also the corollary of that, and that's the idea of, you know, with a private list like this, that Black residents ended up getting shut out of this neighborhood. Did anyone go deeper on that subject with you?
You know, my whole thought process in doing this film was never to go outside of the neighborhood in terms of what other people were thinking of the Hill. I wanted to keep it as insular as possible, just to have them tell their story. This would be a completely different documentary if I was going to go into that area of the film with these other different perspectives. And, you know, that was something that we made a conscious decision of to make sure that, you know, we're just telling the Hill story. We're not telling the story of, you know, St. Louis. We're telling the story of the Hill, which just so happens to be in St. Louis.
Hmm. Now, a number of the folks who appear within your film, they describe the Hill as almost like a cocoon, like saying that it ended up being shielded from the upheaval of the 60s and the 70s. And here's what resident Bob Steckhan and former resident Furman Pericelli had to say about that.
Things were changing back in the 60s. And a lot of things on the, you know, around the nation were changing, but it seemed like on the Hill, things really didn't change. It's kind of stayed the same.
There was an insulation. I grew up with Martin Luther King, the Vietnam War. Yeah, we had longer hair, but I don't think we really knew about all that was going on. We knew more about Christopher Columbus and America Vespucci than other people who were the heroes of the day.
And again, that's from America's Last Little Italy. Do you think that insulation that they describe there, do you think that remains the case still today?
I don't know how. I don't think that that's true. I think that a lot of, the Hill has definitely evolved since that time. But you got to go back and think. This is a time, there's no social media. There's, only a handful of channels on the television. So, what did these people know? They knew their neighbors. They knew their school. They knew their church. And the Hill was, definitely at that time, a self-sufficient area where everything that these people needed was available on the Hill. So, we get into that in the film, the fact that, a lot of these people, a lot of them didn't even have cars, or they would just walk the neighborhood. Many of them worked in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So, obviously you're going to have that when all you know is an Italian community that you've lived in your entire life. That's obviously going to, have a cocoon-like effect on many of the residents. Mm-hmm. But at this point in time, I think that, that's not the case anymore. Obviously the people of the Hill now leave the neighborhood, and they also, they have access to social media and television and all of these things that mm-hmm. that would help shape that thought process of being more aware of all the things going on in our country.
Mm-hmm. That wider world, the door has been
yes.
opened and it's there now. We're talking to filmmaker Joseph Paleo about his film, America's Last Little Italy. It's part of the Filmmaker Showcase that kicks off tomorrow. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. That's 90.7 KWMU.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.
And now back to our conversation. In just a minute, I want to talk about some of the other offerings at the 20th Annual Filmmaker Showcase. But first, we've been having a really interesting conversation with filmmaker Joseph Paleo about America's Last Little Italy. This is a one-hour documentary about the Hill neighborhood. And we have a caller who would like to join us and I think has a story to tell. So let's go to the phone lines. Jerry is calling from O'Fallon. Jerry, hi. You're on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Yes, I had a film in the showcase in 2015, so I know how hard it is to actually complete a documentary film. My family has deep roots in the Hill. All four of my grandparents immigrated from Italy, and my father's family he grew up on the Hill, all of his friends. I, our second generation, all the people I knew, my cousins, we used to hang out at Roses 40 years ago, which was a great place. The Hill really is like a small town. You'd go to Roses, and it was a very multi-generational group there. But the thing I always found interesting was my late grandmother, my maternal grandmother, died at the age of 80 in 1976. But up until a couple years before she died, she often went back to Italy to visit, and all of my grandparents, their age group, it was interesting that they, when you would ask them if they ever wanted to go back, they all had the same answer. They would say, "I didn't leave anything there." They had no interest in returning to Sicily at all.
That's interesting. So she would go back to visit, but she didn't feel any pull to move back there.
Oh, not to move, no, but we still had relatives over there. We had still had relatives in Sicily, but None of the Sicilians wanted anything to do with going back, even to visit.
Huh. That is very interesting. Thank you for sharing that, Jerry. Joseph, was that also the case for your family? Also Sicilians, I know now.
Yes, they've never gone back, as far as I know. You know, the people that we spoke to, their family, like you said, they really were leaving nothing. There was no jobs available for them there, and you know, they were really coming in search of the American dream, which The Hill is definitely a testament to that. The Hill is, you know, the quintessential American dream, where you could come and make something of yourself and build, you know, build your own home, build your church, build a neighborhood that still lasts to this day.
So that actually is that leads into a good question that came in from Twitter. This is from Jerry, a different Jerry, Jerry with a G. He wants to know what you, Joseph, make of the demolition of recently occupied homes to make way for new homes. Some of these new homes priced as high as $400,000, $700,000, taking away these tiny little homes that have kind of been the Hill's flavor through time, giving it a different kind of look. What do you make of all that?
Yes, the shotgun homes are what make the Hill the Hill. But I do understand, in being down there extensively these last 2 years, that a lot of these houses do have to, they're just simply, they can't be rehabbed. They're so, now that's just, you're speaking of very rare cases that houses are being neglected. That's almost unheard of.
Yeah, those houses are nicely maintained throughout that neighborhood.
Exactly, yes. But in the rare case that a home is not able to be rehabbed, I do understand the thought process going into demolishing the home and then building a new one in its place. I think as long as the Hill maintains its sense of community and its ethnic identity in terms of the Italian, the rich Italian heritage that is seen down there, I think the Hill is always going to be strong and be able to withstand anything, especially the building of new homes. I don't really find that to be too much of a detriment to the neighborhood.
And certainly modern families are not always happy with just those small shotguns. They want a lot more room than your grandparents were willing to live with back in the day. So tastes have changed.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, one last question from Twitter, and then I'm going to get to the filmmaker showcase, I promise. Tim on Twitter asks, this documentary sounds like The Hill maintained its ethnic purity through redlining. What's the filmmaker's perspective on how this plays out given our current events? Is this something you've thought about?
I mean, obviously, whenever you're, you know, tackling a subject like that, you know that that kind of thought process is going to come across through other people's perspectives. But I think what we do in our film is show the reason why those type of ideas, why the things that were done were done. Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, you know, if these things aren't done, we're not having this conversation right now because there would be no Hill. You know, this is why the neighborhood still exists to this day, is because of the, you know, the Italian pride that these people had. And, you know, this is their neighborhood. They're proud of it. And, you know, when you have people living in the house that their grandfather built or their great-grandfather built, you're going to have a sense of pride about that home and about that neighborhood. And I think that's, you know, really one of the biggest parts of our film is showing that. And, you know, obviously, you know, people are going to have, you know, their thoughts about the way that it was done. We knew that, you know, mm-hmm. We knew that obviously that was going to be, you know, probably a topic that would come up. But like I said, I wanted to keep this neighborhood, I wanted to keep this film insular to the neighborhood and not really get into all of the outside perspectives that were seen of the Hill. That would be I'd be making a completely different documentary.
Mm-hmm. And there might well be a good documentary there too, but you're saying that's not
that's
the
just
film
not
you've
something
set out
I
to
would
make.
Be yeah. Exactly. That's just not something I would be interested in making. Would be, you know, trying to get into all of the you know, details as to what other people were thinking about. You know, this is my grandparents' neighborhood. Mm-hmm. This is something that, you know, I'm an Italian American, and obviously I'm proud of the Hill. when I go down on the hill, I have a kinship towards the neighborhood because of what that neighborhood stands for to me. You know, when I look at the immigrant statue at St. Ambrose, I'm looking at, you know, my great grandparents that came over to this country with a dream that one day they would have a better life and that I would have a better life. So, you know, this neighborhood is special for that reason. And that's just not a documentary that I'd be interested in making.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is filmmaker Joseph Palaio talking about his film America's Last Little Italy. And this is part of the 20th Annual Filmmaker Showcase that kicks off tomorrow. And our second guest here is joining us to talk about that, to give us the bigger picture on this. And that is Chris Clark, the Artistic Director for Cinema St. Louis. So, Chris, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
So we've been talking a lot about America's Last Little Italy. Tell me, what about this documentary appealed to you to highlight it in the showcase?
Not only am I a proud St. Louisan, I spent my youth growing up in South St. Louis on the edge of the hill. Mm-hmm. And it was always just a fascinating neighborhood with deep roots and well-manicured lawns, thanks to Monsignor Polizzi, and great food. It was just like a world within a world, and I always loved every bit about it. Joey actually made a film a couple of years ago that was a spoof of Top Gun called Top Sun that actually won a couple of awards in this very event. A couple of years go by, then all of a sudden he presents this film to me that is a great, great piece of St. Louis history, and it's just a well-crafted documentary with people that I recognize. Also includes a small bit from former board chair Kim Tucci. Mm-hmm. So, so many things to love, so many things I knew, so many things I learned. Just a great, well-crafted St. Louis story.
So you mentioned that you had featured Joseph's previous film, this short parody, Top Sun. It sounds hilarious. By bringing in filmmakers when they're just getting started, sort of beginning to learn their craft, you see the payoff. They come back to you when they've then got the full-length film and they want you to feature it.
Yeah, this is a competitive event. Just because you make a film and send it to us does not mean absolutely we'll show it. It's a competitive event. We have about 100 submissions, and we selected 78 films to be in the event this year. This was an easy decision. I'd watched about 30 seconds of it and knew that it was something we had to do. Mm. So I'm just thrilled to be able to be part of this presentation. And we've actually sold tickets in Italy. So there's going to be people this week watching from all over the world and all over the country.
Wow, that's so cool to hear. And because this is online only, you're able to do that. But Joseph, I imagine for you, when you were working on this film, you probably had some dreams of seeing this on the big screen at a festival. Was it hard when this festival had to shift, obviously for obvious reasons, but was that a hard come down for you?
Definitely. Right around the time that we had finished the film, we were faced with a decision. Do we start submitting to festivals, or should we hold off in hopes that maybe down the line there's going to be in-person festivals that we'd be able to share this film at? But we were kind of seeing the trajectory, and I believe at this time we had already known that the International Festival would be online as well. There's just no telling that even a year from now there's going to be in-person festivals. Mm-hmm. So we thought, you know, why hold on to it? Like, let's share it. You know, one of the big things obviously is, you know, when you're dealing with a lot of your interviews, majority of your interviews with people over the age of 80, one more year, they might not be able to see the film. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the film, we actually show all the people that have passed away just in this last 2 years. So that also played into our decision as to, let's do this now. And you know, I really want to stress this. This film has an uplifting message. And, you know, it's a very positive film that shows, you know, what the people of the hill were able to accomplish. And I thought that, you know, at this uncertain time, like you've mentioned, with things going on, you know, around the nation, with Corona and other things, I thought this would be a perfect time to, you know, to share this with everyone and hopefully bring some positivity into their life. You know, so often in St. Louis especially, you're hearing a lot of negative things. You know, I feel like the Hills is a positive thing that I want to share with people, and hopefully other people of St. Louis feel the same way and want to buy a ticket and watch our film from the comfort of their own home. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this is, you know, a positive thing for the city of St. Louis.
Now, Chris, you've got a lot of other films. Obviously, we wanted to sort of dig into this one on the Hill because it is local history that's so interesting to us here in St. Louis. But what are some of the other highlights in this year's showcase?
Oh, it's just such a wide variety of things and skill levels and shapes and sizes and colors and races of people. Nate Townsend, whose father was Tom Townsend, passed away last year. He did a just fantastic documentary on the subject of suicide that was in recently in an international competition. We also included that. St. Louis is a character, in not just in Joey's film, but in many, many of the films, because you see, not that we can really go outside very easily anymore and go places, but, you know, restaurants and neighborhoods and buildings and parks all over the city are featured characters. The view of the bridges in Alton, everything all over the city are great characters in these films.
Hmm.
Some are student productions, but many are just hobbyists and professional filmmakers living amongst us who just love to make films and just want to share it with local audiences.
Now, Chris, it feels like it's enough work to launch this big online showcase, but I understand this year you've also conducted individual interviews with 55 different film directors. These are now bonus Q&A content. What prompted you to want to go the extra mile with that?
Well, as we reinvented our everything we do, we wanted just to make the experience as palatable and interesting to everybody. So we had a practice run with our Q-Fest event, which ended a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. Where I was literally interviewed filmmakers from all over the world, and that was fun. But with this event, because there's so many directors, especially in within the context of a single short subject show, there could be 12 or 15 directors, so we never have the opportunity to drag them all up in front of an audience to have a Q&A. So we decided to do this tactic, whereas we have these individual one-on-one conversations as part of the stream and also on our YouTube channel, where we can share the face and voice and vision of each filmmaker in a way that we couldn't before. We'd point them out and Joey's sitting in the back row, wave at him, everybody, and then that's it. This way we're able to share, you know, little conversations and a vision of the filmmaker. I had a great time doing that in Zoom Studio West here in my house. It was fun. I had a great time, like a little talk show.
Now, I know in addition to the films, in addition to these interviews, you're also offering a series of free master classes this year. What's the idea on that?
A little bit, you know, part of our educational mandate to give back to the community in any way we can. So a lot of people want to know, well, hey, how can I do that? How can I be part of this festival?
Hmm.
Well, these are a series of four classes on different topics of making a indie feature film on a shoestring budget.
Hmm.
You know, all the aspects, you know, from fundraising to writing to crafting, casting. What, you know, if you think you want to do this, this is what you need to know.
Hmm. Joseph, do you think you'll be partaking in that either as an instructor or as somebody who's going to learn from the masterclass?
I definitely think that I'll be tuning in to see some of these masterclasses, and maybe down the line I'll be a part of one of these to try and share, you know, what we've learned in doing this film for the last 2 years.
I mean, this is a real community of filmmakers here, Chris. You're both showing people each other's films and then sort of giving them some insight into the process. It seems like that's what we all need at this time when we're all sick of streaming the same shows on Netflix.
Yeah, and be able to share over time, over these 20 years, I don't have an exact number, but somewhere between 1,800 to 2,000 films made by St. Louisans.
Hmm,
and we're very proud of this legacy, yes.
So if people want to participate in this year, I know it all kicks off the minute the clock strikes midnight. It's 12:01 in the morning. People can access all these great films, all these interviews. Where do they want to go to do that?
The first stop is to go to the Cinema St. Louis website at cinemastlouis.org and then get thee to the showcase pages of our website. Many links from Instagram and Facebook, everything. So get there. There is a listing that describes all the programs, including this one, America's Last Salute, is alphabetically first.
Ah.
But then there's a series of documentary short subject programs, some narrative feature films, six narrative shorts programs, two documentary short programs. So just click on the information, read what you want. There are links that take you to the virtual festival site, which is Eventive, which is our streaming portal. A few clicks later, it's not unlike streaming something from Amazon Prime or Hulu, anything like that, to your big screen. So you just have your home movie experience, just like you're watching something on cable.
That's great. Well, we'll also have those links on our website. That's stlpublicradio.org. Chris Clark of Cinema St. Louis, thank you so much for joining us again today.
This has been fun. Thank you.
And Joseph Paleo, America's Last Little Italy. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.